It's another thrilling episode of the Truth and Reconciliation Podcast. It's the fantasy football discussion tonight. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It's great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I'm coming off the high of doing a fantasy football draft tonight and gearing up for ours that's upcoming this weekend, so I could not be better.
Yeah. We've been discussing the warrants of the auction draft versus the snake draft, but truthfully, once we get into the week of the season, it's time for drafts across the board. Yeah, I just couldn't be more excited. And as much as we've poo-pooed the snake draft compared to the auction draft, any kind of drafting is fun because 'tis the season for fantasy football. It's good to be back in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the draft I did tonight, it was a snake draft, but we were offline, live, in a restaurant doing it together. So that, I mean, it's hard to beat that experience, regardless of what kind of draft you're doing. So.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Well, it's great to see you tonight. Finally, my ugly mug isn't the only way to go. And we're glad to be broadcasting live for a couple of viewers here. And I'm sure they're happy to get to know you face to face now. You're not just some ominous voice speaking angelically over the crowd.
I'm a little too large. I wouldn't mind just being the small thumbnail in the corner of the screen, but happy to be here, internet.
Well, thanks. The reason I chose you to be the bigger window is because you have more hair than I do, and so I figured our fans would appreciate seeing, you know, a more attractive thumbnail. So
by the slimmest of margins,
just barely. You're working on catching up with me. It won't be too long.
Yeah, it won't be long before I just take the full razor to it as you have.
Well, I encourage the beard if you can get past the Pedro stash at some point in your facial hair career.
Tell you what, my I went a couple days longer than normal shaving last week.
Yeah,
and I tend to bring up my wife every time we podcast, but
well,
here it is in. So all of a sudden she looked at me and the lighting caught it just right. Where she said, "What's wrong with your upper lip?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "The hair doesn't grow like right above your lip." And I went and looked in the mirror, and she's right. The hair does not grow. There's just like, it's that. Like a quarter of an inch gap between my actual lip and where the hair starts. And it looks really weird once you start to focus on it and actually see it. It looks really weird.
I'm pretty sure that's the epitome. Like, that's the actual definition of a Pedro mustache. I mean, you know, your parents were very prophetic when they named you Peter.
Yeah, I know. If I ever wanted to scare the crap out of my wife, I would just leave a mustache only and walk out of the bathroom and say hey, because she would want to slap me in the face immediately.
Well, you know what? It's been great. My wife has been begging me to grow my hair back out, and I keep on telling her, sweetie, I've got no hair to grow back in. Like, you would end up with, like, the Phil Collins. Like, it would be the nubbin out here on front and nothing else to go with. And you'd be even more disappointed with the product. And so what has actually been a nice byproduct is that she's actually encouraged the longer beard. I've been able to grow this out. It's you know, and it used to I kept it pretty close, you know, kind of buzzed to the face, and now she's enjoying the longer beard. I'm making up for what's not on top. So anyway,
you've crossed the point of no return. Once you decide to shave it all off, it doesn't come back. It's not coming back. You've crossed that line.
No, and I did it very strategically. I actually shaved my head the week that I was out of town. And so I had said goodbye to Allie in the morning when she went off to work, and I shaved my head, and then I went off to work for a week. And so I kind of strategically got it so that she was really missing me by the time that I was coming back. So I told her while I was gone, honey, by the way, I also shaved my head. So it wasn't like a real shocking thing when I returned because she was so anxious to see me, she got over it really quickly. I thought that was a pretty
approach. Nice to play then. Very nice to play.
Speaking of strategy, you know what we got coming up? Fantasy football.
Pro segue right there.
Thank you. Well, you know, I get paid quite a bit to do this.
Yeah,
so.
You are in the business, aren't you?
Indeed I am. Now, what we've got coming up today is Wednesday. This is the final podcast before our fantasy football draft. And after this weekend, we're going to be setting the tone for everything that we've got coming up, including the, of course, rosters that will get set after this weekend, the tone in which we'll be launching our 2015-2016 season. I couldn't be more excited. I think that the competition couldn't be stronger, and we're really, really looking forward to getting into the draft. What are your thoughts now as we're just now T-minus, what, 4 days out?
Yeah, and it's, you know, this. I think this is we're drafting on the latest possible day to draft, basically.
Right.
It's the Sunday that's 4 days before the first NFL game. all the meaningful preseason play has already happened. So there's really nothing unknown. Or we know as much as we're ever going to know before we start drafting.
Right.
And I think I like that timing the best because, you know, I think there are still some injuries happening this past weekend with the third preseason game. There's still some playing time issues being sorted out in preseason, that sort of stuff. So,
sure.
And, you know, I think most, I'd say 90% of drafts are done by now.
Right.
I'm excited. And I've done three, I'll be doing three drafts this year, and they've all been spaced about, you know, about a week apart. So I think it's a slow ramp up to the start of the NFL season. I'm really getting excited about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually haven't had my drafts yet. I told you already that I'm heading out of country tomorrow, and I'm pretty sure that my other league commissioner strategically moved our draft from what was supposed to be yesterday to this upcoming Friday night while I'm inconveniently traveling. I will not be able to draft live. I'm going to have a surrogate drafter, proxy drafter, if you will, take my place and hopefully be able to perform well. It's a snake draft. I do have that going for me, and I've been able to talk through. In fact, I think my proxy drafter might be viewing in tonight, so I hope that that Chris is participating. I want him to know that he was my first pick, that he was my number one go-to before try to recruit anybody else.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Hey, I just assumed you were busy on a Friday night at 8 o'clock.
Friday night at 8 o'clock, that's prime time.
Look, I can't win, okay? Like, so Chris wasn't actually my first pick. and if he's watching right now, I'm surprised he hasn't commented in. It just happened to be availability. So I can't win. I'm over it. I'm over trying to find substitutes.
He was the first person you saw, is what you're saying.
Look, a man should keep his house in order. He should keep his drafting plan in order as well. And those who you know, you recruit to sub for you, you better have a quick relationship and a good relationship with them. And don't tell anybody of your friends, because it's a highly offensive, you know, thing. It's like choosing your best man at a wedding. Like, oh, it's not me. You know, yeah. There's just a lot of assumptions that are made.
Yeah, and it's like choosing, you know, if you die, who's going to take care of your kids? It's a it's a big decision, and right. You can get some hurt feelings if you know, as they're reading the will, I say, and in charge of the children will be, you know, Uncle Ned. People might react a little strongly to that.
Yeah, especially because, you know, there's no Uncle Ned, so that would be very alarming. You're right.
Well, and there's no Uncle Ned who should ever take care of kids. If you're Uncle Ned,
that's
then
true. Then you're probably, you know, yeah, you probably have a restraining order of some kind on you.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Certainly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of names,
man,
I'm on fire with the segues tonight. Let's talk about some fantasy football names. It's kind of a philosophy within our league that is shared. You've got a couple of different approaches when it comes to naming your team for the year. Of course, you've got the fantasy football puns, especially when it comes to player names being, you know, kind of dissected and put together inside some witty pun for a team name. You know, you try to adapt a popular player. Of course, you know, the more popular, cheesy, older ones would be like Tom Brady's Bunch or, you know, somewhere over the Dwayne Bow, you know, things like this, the punny names. And I tip my hat to them. I do appreciate a good NFL pun. But there's a philosophy that underlies behind that, and that is, do you change your name each season for a fresh start, or do you stick with something once you find gold and just run with it for the rest of commitment to that that league? What are your thoughts on league name changes, Pete? Or excuse me, management name changes inside a league?
I think a fantasy football team name should be taken seriously, and a lot of thought and effort should be put into it, and it should be something that you lock into for at least the full season. It should have enough longevity to it that it's not a 1 week joke or it's the hot topic for that week, or it's a preseason storyline from 3 months before the season started and no one remembers it by November.
Sure.
You know, it should have sort of that run time to it, definitely. And it should also be something that's meaningful to you, and isn't overdone, which I think some of those pun names, based off of NFL players' names, can be. And also, you just put yourself in an awkward situation where if you are naming your team somewhere over the Dwayne Bow, and, you don't really want to draft Dwayne Bowe. Well, then I don't know what to do then.
Are you committed? Are you stuck at that point to that player?
You have to take Dwayne Bowe. You know, do you have to reach around earlier to take Dwayne Bowe to make sure that, you know, he doesn't end up on some other team that hasn't staked their claim to him via team name?
Well, I'm going to fly right by that phrasing that you just chose there and ask the question, what about when you go with that name and somebody else has already drafted that? Isn't that offensive, you know, if I were to name my team after a player that you drafted?
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, going to the prom and stealing someone else's, you know, date for all the dances, you know.
Yeah.
It's not cool. It's against the code.
Well, to each their own.
So what's your process for choosing a fantasy football team name?
Well, see, I'm a fan of the commit for a good while. I like cultural relevancy. Like, I think that your team name should be something that people can look at and appreciate. You know, not just a simple fantasy football pun, but rather one that makes you think a little bit and one that you can tip your hat to. With that being said, I have committed to Blue Sky Seth Amphetamine. For quite some time now. That name was, of course, a derivative of the ever-popular Breaking Bad series, and, of course, my name being Seth, it fit in well to a Seth Amphetamine pun, if you will. Blue Sky being the brand of, and now that I'm describing this on the air, I realize that I was promoting a narcotic, an illegal substance at that.
Going for that explicit tat on the tab.
Yeah, you know the edgy kind of, man, this guy's 1 foot in, 1 foot out on the the edgy scale.
Rename the Periscope something and about Blue Sky Seth Amphetamine would probably get a few more hits on it.
We'd probably be a little bit more. Of course, this would quickly devolve into a Breaking Bad fan club discussion, I'm sure.
No problems with that.
But here's the thing. I enjoyed Breaking Bad. I celebrate, how good of a show that really was, how dark of a show, but also how riveting. I also, commiserate with a lead protagonist, or in this case, an antagonist, who's also bald. And, I say, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, it's kind of my push there. And the concept of Blue Sky Seth Amphetamine was actually a nickname. Now, here's the thing. I get called a lot of things. Not all of them are appropriate. But when it comes to nicknames, everybody tries to put their own spin on Seth. Nobody's ever really been happy with just the one syllable. Let's just call him by his name, Seth. They have to – and I appreciate it because it endears me to different people in different ways, because everybody comes up with their own unique description of who I am. And so you get the Seth Amphetamine. That was a friend of mine here locally in the Houston area who, would always say it like, Seth Amphetamine! Like, he was hopped up on it. Like, he was always like, hey! You know?
Yeah.
And so that was always fun. You get the little children, the kids, our fan club of the younger sort. They always have a hard time. Seth is a difficult phonetic as a name. And so you got, the S-E, which is tough. And then you got the TH, which is tougher, especially for like a four-year-old. And so that kind of derivative always would end up with all sorts of different nicknames, like my favorite one being Nuff. I was Nuff for a while. Or I was Sefer or Seth or Set. My brother couldn't say TH, so I was Set. And I have a sweet little niece here who couldn't say either, and so they went with Uncle Ted. And so I became Uncle Ted.
Close to Uncle Ned.
It's very close to Uncle Ned. Thank God that one consonant removed from being a creepy uncle. But
you're about to be on a watch list.
Yeah, no joke. It's just implied when that's your name. So when it comes to naming my fantasy football team, I don't like changing it. I don't like having one name and then midway through the season you have to recommit to something else because either your joke ran dry or no longer became relevant, or because your team is not living up to the name in which you gave it. And I see that happen a lot, where you get guys that name, their team in some epic, performance driven name, and then halfway through the season they're, 0-7 or 0-8 or 1-6 or 1-7, and they have to change their name to more accurately describe the quality of their team. I don't like the reactive name process. I think you should stick with your name, go with what you got, run with it, and own it all the way through.
I, I agree, but I also can't fault someone whose season has completely gone in the toilet, because what else what else are they gonna do at that point but change their team name? You still want to feel like you're
part of fun.
You know, you want to be involved. You're like, hey, this is still fantasy football. I want to do something, guys. My team's not gonna do anything anymore, so I might as well change the team name.
I think you got to bear the flag proudly now. Like, at this point, it's a red badge of courage. I mean, just let that thing fly. Just own it, man. Even if you're riding the ship to the bottom of the ocean, just hang on to it.
Yeah.
That's my 2 cents. But
absolutely.
Well, I will tell you, this year I have been contemplating a name change, and you and I have, you know, discussed this offline, as it were, because I wanted to make sure that I paid the appropriate homage to you in the discussion. I've been Blue Sky Seth Empedemy for a couple of seasons now. And this year, I feel like the Breaking Bad connection is kind of fizzled. It's no longer got its pop. It's no longer got its relevancy. But, however, on the flip side, we do have a new legacy inside pop culture that is out there. There is a new level, a new, you know, eyebrows are raising in intrigue. You know, eyes are awakening. You know, hearts are responding to a new cultural element that is taking the world by storm, and that is the Truth and Reconciliation podcast.
Certainly.
And if you would, Peter, would you like to share with our viewers and our listeners kind of where Truth and Reconciliation as a label came from? In fact, I'd love to have a reenactment as to the because of the camaraderie that you and I share in our relationship, right, and how long we've been best buddies. And so if you would indulge me, I'd love to hear about where we got Truth and Reconciliation as the name of our podcast.
So this will only increase the amount, whatever level of nerds you think we are now.
It's about to skyrocket.
We're about to crank it up to 11. And
rank the meter.
Yeah. So Seth and I, we really bonded as far as becoming best friends, I believe, through playing the game of Halo on the Xbox.
Well, let's be fair. Let's start where it actually started, was through baseball. I mean, we have to start there.
Friendship started through baseball.
I just think that if we just start with the video game, then we shoot ourselves in the nerd foot. And so I think we got to gain some credence from the get-go.
We don't have much of a nerd foot to stand on anymore.
Okay. All right.
At this point. I mean, look at us, Seth. Look at what we're doing.
Yeah, it's midnight and we're on Periscope and podcasting about fantasy football while our wives sleep away their pain and loneliness.
Look in the mirror. You know what we are.
All right. So, well, as you were.
Yep. So it started with baseball. Certainly, we became friends off the field as well, and then it was really through weekly, perhaps more often than just weekly, but certainly every Tuesday night I was at Seth's house for right up until the edge of curfew.
And we pushed the limit.
Often over, you know, got it down to a science, exactly how long it took me to drive home and how late could I be without actually getting in trouble.
Yeah. How many red lights did you have to run?
Exactly. So, every Tuesday night we would play Halo for a minimum of 3 hours, just the two of us. This was before Xbox Live was a thing. It was just us on an Xbox. We play head to head, and then we would play cooperative missions together, which was really the most fun. And our favorite mission was Truth and Reconciliation on the first Halo. And we played it so much that I'm pretty sure what took most people 45 minutes to an hour to beat, we timed it down to about 12 minutes because we had a defined system of exactly who did what, including who quoted what lines from the beginning of the mission.
That's right.
As characters are giving you the introduction of why you're there.
It was a pondering question. I mean, they expected us to get up into, you know, a ship that was flying well above the surface of the map, and so it's a natural question, you know, that would come out. It's like, so how are we supposed to get into the ship if it's in the air and we're on the ground? Core issued me a rifle, not wings.
There's a gravity lift that carries troops and supplies between the ship and the surface. That's our ticket in.
And there goes the nerd meter, just all the way up. There it is. But from that, we kind of epitomized our relationship on the foundation of Truth and Reconciliation in Halo, and that's what has carried us over. All that to say, that's the label of our podcast and our website. You can visit us at truthandrecon.com. And that being said, back to our discussion on our fantasy football team names. As of this year, Peter, I'm happy to declare that I'm going to go ahead and, for the sake of continuing on in branding this legacy in into popular culture, my new fantasy football team name within our league will be Truth and Reconciliation, TNR.
I'm proud of you. I'm honored that you, you know, involved me in the discussion as far as when, as you're going through the thought process. I think it's the right move. And it's not just a, map on Halo that we play all the time, but it's also meaningful for fantasy football because you will face the truth and you will face your reconciliation of your decisions as the season goes on. So, absolutely believe that is a fantasy football team name built for a long time. I approve strongly.
I'm real excited. I appreciate your having the discussion with me. I brought it up with Peter because I wanted to make sure that, you know, Truth and Reconciliation, it belongs to us. It's not mine. This podcast isn't mine per se. I may be the, you know, technical drive behind it, but I'm certainly not the brains behind it. And it's a love child of us both. And so I did not want to infringe upon what I would consider a shared legacy by, you know, sniping it for myself. And Peter, in his grace and his brotherhood that we share, certainly gave me the nod of approval. Not only approval, but it was another one of these things.
I'm really glad. Really glad bromances have kind of become a thing in pop culture, a positive thing in pop culture, because it's really laying it on thick right now. But you know, it's true. You know, Breaking Bad, there's a pretty strong bromance there between, you know, Walt and what's the Aaron Paul's character? Jesse.
Forget it. There you go.
Yeah, Walt and Jesse. There you go. And then and Sherlock, you know, there's really strong bromance themes there as well. So, you know, I'm glad that I feel in a safe zone just culturally, you know, with these waters we're in here, Seth.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, I saw that Anthony joined us just a minute ago, and he just offered his fantasy football name up. It's also very culturally relevant and certainly tongue-in-cheek at rocking the Cosby Quaaludes. A little nod to Mr. Cosby and his extra curricular affairs, if you will.
Yep. That's a strong one-year name.
Indeed.
Next year, won't have any idea what that means.
Shifting sand. Culture is a shifting sand. Yeah.
My team name in our league is Raymond Hessel's Breakfast, which may be unfamiliar to many, but it is from my favorite movie, Fight Club, which is, in my opinion, the greatest movie in the world. I don't believe you share that opinion, but
I don't. That's okay.
Your opinion is wrong.
Okay.
And there's a scene where they are threatening Raymond K. Hessel. To the point where he believes his life is in danger. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they send him on his way and he runs away terrified.
Yep.
But he has received a little bit of a spark in his life where he's kind of stuck in neutral. He's working a crappy job, and not going to school like he should be. So they've kind of kicked him back towards go to school, get a good job, do something with your life. And at the end, one character says, "I feel sick," and the other says, "Imagine how he feels." And he says, "What's the point of that?" And he says, "Tomorrow his breakfast will be a sweeter meal than you and I have ever tasted." Mm-hmm. And so that's why my team name is Raymond Hessel's Breakfast, because it is my team will be sweeter than anything that you have ever experienced.
Well, I can't argue with you after you won the league last year, so.
Yeah, I've had the name for a while. It finally paid off last year.
Yeah,
so.
finally reaped the reward. Yeah. So I think it's a great name. What I love even more about your Raymond Hessel's Breakfast name is that your logo is another tribute to not only the movie that is Fight Club, not only to the great actor that is Brad Pitt, but also to another throwback to our friendship, and that is the sunglasses removal gif, where Brad Pitt, in his disdain for a comment, grabs his sunglasses, pulls them off in shock with the perfect look of, what the heck? It's a great team logo. It's a great moment. You and I have often referred to that moment as the hold your glare. You hold that glare. moment, because there's many moments in life where you just got to rip your sunglasses off and glare somebody down.
Yeah, and then that's become a more popular meme, I think, on the internet as far as, you know, the removal of the sunglasses to either say something profound or mm-hmm. or whatever. But I certainly think of its genesis with you and I on a long car trip to New Mexico.
That's right.
And the importance of holding the glare when the time calls for it. So
that's right.
It is a good throwback, and it's an important point that I think the team logo should support your team name.
Indeed, it should.
And if you were to keep Blue Sky Seth and Amphetamine, I would recommend that because you are now bald and you do have facial hair similar to Heisenberg mm-hmm. as is in your team logo now, you should recreate the photo.
Oh yeah.
With yourself in it, because I know you have the talent and ability to do that.
Yeah.
So you know, maybe do it anyway. Maybe change your team name and recreate the photo anyway for fun.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much. I just have to knock the sides off and just rock this goatee. Yeah,
easy.
Yep, that'd be fun. Yep, well, we're excited. We've got plenty of good team names going on in our league this year. What would you say is your favorite team name outside of course, yours and mine? What would be your favorite team name inside our league?
Outside of mine, it's you know, distant second place. However, I do appreciate the CFL Rejects
mm-hmm.
Team name that's in our league. The owner of that team is Canadian himself. His family is Canadian. So as a call out to the Canadian Football League, CFL mm-hmm. Rejects, also call out to if you've been rejected from the CFL, you know, it's nice to have the self what's it called? Self-defacing. It seems like that should be the word, but I don't think that's the word. Anyway, you know what I'm saying.
I do.
To kind of have a little shot at yourself in your own team name, because then you're lowering the bar of expectations of what people can expect from you. They are seeing that you don't think much of yourself, so what should they think of you? And then you can really, you know, bring the shock and awe as you come into the season and if you play well.
Yeah. I enjoy that name. I also, looking back at last season, realized, man, we had a lot of movie shout outs. That seems to be a pretty popular trend inside our league. We had the Urban Cowboys from your brother Andy. We had South Boston Saints from the famous Brock Waskow, who Brock would tell you that Fight Club is nowhere near the greatness of film that is the Boondock Saints.
He has a Boondock Saints tattoo, so that is a fitting name for him.
Indeed,
it is. Tattoo to back it up.
We also have the Knights of Columbus, Derek Irwin. I think that's a shout-out to Anchorman, unless I'm mistaken.
Yep, it is.
And I think that was it for, except for yours, for the movie call-outs there. I did enjoy the irony in Michael Fitzsimmons' New York Rebuilders, because I didn't know he was going to go through with it, and then he actually went through with it. And he drafted the New York Giants as his fantasy football roster. Nearly
also a team that needed to be rebuilt.
So. Very much so, and yet he failed on that part, so the irony was steep. So all he did was redrafters, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, what's in a name? Plenty. There will be plenty of trash talk this semester. We'll be referring to managers and their team names for the rest of the season. I'm so excited next week to be talking about our draft and analyzing the grade of each. Now, I will remind our listeners and our viewers, we will be coming to you via podcast. We won't be broadcasting live next week since our technology won't allow us to do so while I'm across the pond. But we'll be sure to post the iTunes podcast and MP3 files online. You'll be able to get to those no problem. We'll resume. We're very committed. If it means, you know, you staying up pretty late and me getting up very early to make sure it gets done, it's worth it to us because 'tis the season.
Yeah, it's like the 19th century over there in England. They haven't advanced any technology since we won the Revolutionary War.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's accurate and offensive. So, the next
Take
conversation...
that, England.
The next conversation we are going to have tonight, on top of our conversation about team names, was really preparation for the draft. We also wanted to discuss a point that you had thought of, and that was
part of the draft preparation process. It's not just all the science and the names and the numbers of fantasy football. You've also got to think about your environment and what sort mm-hmm. of what are you going to create for yourself to
sure.
get optimal drafting success?
Sure.
And part of that goes into that is nourishment, and you got to have the right snacks and the right drinks there with you. So what's your game plan for draft day food? What is the optimal draft day food to have yeah. there by your side to propel you to victory?
Yeah. Well, I feel like we're just taking a walk down memory lane here as we reminisce about our relationship, you know, our friendship that we've, would consider a long and very deep friendship that you and I possess, going on, about 15 years now?
Yep.
Throwback that I'm thinking about is one that I no longer indulge in due to health choices, but that is, of course, our beloved beverage of choice. Our friendship and our season of Halo, where we were spending about every Tuesday night, not only throwing it down on Truth and Rec, we were also throwing it back as we indulged in A&W cream soda. And did we indulge?
So much.
The sweet honey nectar that is A&W cream soda was a beverage legacy that was passed down to me by my father, who I don't think we ever went to my grandmother's house without him opping up the fridge, popping an A&W with that sweet sound and just glugging that thing back. Oh, I can taste it now. It's the sweet, sweet nectar of A&W cream soda. Now, we had choices. We had A&W in the can. We had IBC. Syrup in the bottle. I always preferred the can, but it wasn't an unheard of treat to enjoy, drinking straight out of the glass. But
yeah, it wasn't really a Friday night without a 12 pack of A&W for us to crush between us, which is kind sure. of disgusting thinking about it now.
Yeah, I do.
That's
a lot of sugar.
Yeah,
a lot of sugar. So much sugar that we would consume. In fact, I mean, I would recall in one night. I mean, if we went till, you know, played Halo until 4, 5, 6 in the morning, we were talking about drinking 6 or 7 of those a piece.
Yeah.
And that on top of a full tray of your specialty, those pizza rolls that we'd crank out.
Yeah.
That was pretty much a night for us right there.
With no ramifications whatsoever.
Zero ramifications the following day or, you know, within our metabolism weeks thereafter.
What a life it is to be 17.
What happened to us? What is wrong? Yeah, I gave up soda going on now 4 years ago. I haven't drinking a soda or any kind of Coke or any kind of beverage like that in 4 years. And, I mean, I think the month that I stopped, I dropped 5 pounds instantly. Like, it was an immediate, like, hup. You know, health benefit right there. And I don't know why I really was motivated to do it. I just said, I think I've got an unhealthy dependence on Coke, and I'm just going to stop drinking Coke and stop drinking sodas. And the hardest thing, though, was the special occasion cream soda that I had to give up. So that's no longer in my life. That being said, to answer your question, what I enjoy, and I've said this before, I believe that draft day is the preseason Super Bowl. I think that draft day is supposed to be the party, because here we go. This is the launch. It's the kickoff. It's the opening ceremonies of the NFL season and of what will very much so define my recreational experience this fall, and that is the tracking fantasy. And so with that being said, my favorite thing to do is to draft live with my buddies, get together, and enjoy a delicious, well-grilled, custom-built cheeseburger. I cannot draft without the cheeseburger. I'm concerned that my power food on Sunday is going to be substandard because the Brits don't necessarily consider the American cheeseburger to be a staple. And God help them. And my well, I'll say this. It probably can't be worse than the Czech burger that I ordered at this time last year. I don't know if you remember when I traveled to Prague, Czech Republic, last season. I was very excited. We'd gone down to a local...
What kind of meat was that?
Well, see, let me tell you the story. We'd gone down to a local pub and checked out the menu, and there was a Czech burger on the menu. And I was like, Czech burger? I love burgers. I'm enjoying the Czech Republic. I'll have one. And so what they brought out to me was so far semblance from a burger that it actually, like, I welled up. I teared up a little bit, not out of joy, not out of excitement, but out of sheer disappointment with an entire country. The Czech burger was two buns of, and when I say sourdough, I don't mean like, you know, fluffy sourdough bread that you can get here. I mean like rotten dough. So imagine uncooked moldy dough as your bread. And the meat was shredded sauerkraut, shredded onions, and a slice of turkey. Bathed in gravy with additional layers of sauerkraut and sourdough all the way up to the thing reached its end, which was 10 inches tall. It was heartbreakingly disgusting.
I wouldn't even take a bite. I would just...
I tried. I didn't want to offend anybody, but I was offended myself. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a disgrace to the burger suffix there.
Indeed,
You can't just...
It was a true bait
switch. Burger. Yeah. You can't just call it a burger. That's to...
I feel like I was justified when I turned the table over. I really do. I feel like, you know, in the judge did not agree with me, but it was certainly, I felt vindicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I would say, you know, you can't knock it till you try it. Right. So it's one bite, stand up, flip the table over, move. Totally justified.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. So a burger is my meal of choice. I enjoy, nacho Doritos as well as that side snack. I think some kind of dessert. If I got a brownie and some bluebell standing by, I'm gonna be just fine.
Wow, man, you go hard. You don't mess around.
Well, I mean, I anticipate needing 2 hours. It's a mentally exhausting ordeal. I mean,
it's kind of like taking the SAT. You walk out of it a little with your brain a little bit scrambled.
Yeah, so I figure having those indulgences next to me are gonna keep me sharp for the long haul. How about yourself?
For me, it's you know, it's a little lighter. It's I feel like what you're talking about there, burger and Doritos, that's pretty messy on the fingers. And when I'm drafting, I've got to have fingers accessible because it's a lot of movement on the keyboard, you know, a lot of movement on the computer, type around, moving things around or whatever. So I've got to have something that's pretty clean. Pretty light, you know, so a good bowl of trail mix is perfect. You got some nuts, sure. Some raisins, some M&Ms in there. You gotta have a glass of water and, you know, and something with a little kick to it, you know, your Coke or, you know, whatever your caffeinated, drink of choice would be, to, you know, fight off any weariness. You know, and I think that's the way to go. If you know, you got to go like power bar or some yogurt and granola. I think that's the way to go. Something, you know, something not too heavy. You know, you don't want to be going to the bathroom all the time. Don't want
to
be,
Peter, I feel the need to interrupt you. Forgive me. Do you bring this food with you to a live draft?
Oh, not a live draft. No.
Okay. Because
you can't go. I mean,
you can't take a parfait to a live draft and expect to come out of there alive with your man card intact.
No,
like,
no, certainly. Live draft, like tonight, I don't order anything because, you know, that you're at a restaurant, the tables are too small anyway for a draft because people got their laptops and their cheat sheets and everything taking up too much table space.
Okay.
And so you can't have additional food there because that's just adding too many variables into, you know, worrying about what drink is about to spill on all your stuff, and what is going to throw monkey wrench into the process. So you've got to keep it simple, get a drink, maybe share an appetizer with the table. Let someone else be the goat who orders the pizza that takes up, you know, their entire entire drafting space.
Their draft space, yeah. Now I do want to clarify. I will eat my meal before the draft. That is not a during. In fact, I will rarely, if anything, but snack during the actual draft, and that's just for those extra calories to get me through as I'm burning those mental mental calories up. So, but yes, thank you for clarifying. I was concerned there for a little bit that I was actually honestly concerned for your safety. I didn't want to see you get beat up by anybody when you
now if it's at an establishment if it's at an establishment where food is not provided, I may bring my own stuff, not the parfait, but I'll bring a candy bar or a container of planters to the draft with me because you don't have that sustenance, you don't want to lose the edge.
Sure. No, I'm with you. It's a good plan. Well, of course, the draft stereotypes are going to go back to the old, gamer kind of food, power food like Hot Pockets and Mountain Dew, which I think both are disgusting. I believe in a quality pursuit. I saw that look that you just gave me.
I don't mind a Mountain Dew. That's quality.
Yep. If you're giving. Giving cream soda grief about being sweet. Oh, man. I don't know how you stomach a Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew bites. It's not sweet. It bites. And I don't even know if it tastes good, but there is a nostalgia effect to Mountain Dew where it's going back. You know, it was like a 3 cream soda to 1 Mountain Dew ratio when you're having an all night party going. So there's a little bit of nostalgia there. I don't know if it's a good flavor or not, but it's got something to it. It's got that kick to it.
Yeah. I think that's the radioactivity. I think that kick you're getting is the cancer.
If I'm going to go play, some poker, I will bring a Mountain Dew with me. That's what I'll bring to the table. No lie. And so I think it is totally appropriate for a fantasy football draft as well.
Okay. Well, these are on, like I said. I prefer a little more classy of a setup, to tell you the truth. I think that the Mountain Dew is just too college freshman for my taste. That would be like bringing some Red Bull. I just think that's you're trying too hard and too stereotypical for my taste, for sure.
Fair enough.
But there you have it. All right, so you're preparing for your draft. You've got your team name picked out. For this year, this season, hopefully it's something you can commit to for the long haul. You've got your food ready to go. You've got your platter of choice set up. Now, the last question I have before we discuss actual strategic prep, how do you prep your spouse? How do you prep your wife for the fantasy football draft season or the specific draft on a given Sunday night?
So it is let her know as far in advance as possible, what's coming up. It's I have a draft at this time. I will let her know, am I going to be home? Am I going to be there? If I'm home, am I accessible? Or is it I need to be, shut off in a room by myself or for the 2.5 hours or however long it takes to knock out that draft? And so it's just preparation in advance. It's all part of the preparation. You can't spring it on her by the way, I've got a draft, late this afternoon or whatever. And she's I'm transparent enough. She knows what's going on with me enough that she could probably guess when my draft is based on how much research I'm doing or whatever. So
sure.
It's about giving her the advanced time. Sure, she we've got 3 kids under the age of 4. She does to get her mental game on. If it's like our draft is going to be on a weekend. Normally when I could be, helping out with kids more than I normally do or whatever,
right.
She's got to have that kind of that mental preparation herself as I'm mentally preparing for the draft. She's got to know, okay, I'm on duty here. So, marriage is a partnership all the way
indeed
down.
Indeed it is.
All the way down the fantasy football drafts.
Absolutely. Yep. I couldn't agree more. It's important, especially that you don't spring it on your wife, because there is nothing worse than the deer in the headlights, honey, I'm going to be gone tonight, or worse, I'm here, but I'm completely unavailable. Stop bothering me.
Yeah, you've also got to know if your significant other can respect those boundaries. If you say, I'm unavailable, is that really gonna play out? I think there are probably a lead member or two in our league where they may not be able to stay at home the draft because it may not work out to be completely secluded. And so they will be leaving the home simply to have the zero distractions. You know, without saying that directly, you know, towards any lead member or their spouse. But they're, I think, you know, it's all about that preparation, knowing your, knowing how, you know, kind of, what you can expect from your other, as far as a, allowing you to focus on
the. Yeah, no, it's all about the preparation. I like it. I liken it to the umpire being a part of the field, right? You hit the line drive that bounces off the ump. It's fair ball. It's still a live play. And you just have to roll with that and anticipate that as a part of your game. It's just a situational circumstance that you got to deal with. And so I know that the spouse, and my wife has always been fantastic. I tell her the draft time and date a couple of weeks ahead of time, usually about a month or two. I let her know when I'm going to be prepping. We spend our podcast time well after she's gone to bed. But when it actually comes down to draft day, my wife gets excited to support me, or gets even more excited to have time to herself to not worry about me. Usually the latter, but on occasion, man, she's been known to bring a plate of cookies in or to swing stick her head and just ask how's it going. Not trying to interrupt, but it's nice having that, you know, that kind of support in your corner.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so you're prepared. You've got your team name set up. You got your food ready to go. Your wife is in your corner. What do you do between now and Sunday without revealing too many strategic elements that are specific to your league strategy within this team or this division? What do you do? What do you do to finally get ready for our auction draft, Pete?
All right. So for me, the most important thing is to narrow the number of voices that you're listening to down to as short of a list as possible to quiet the abundant sea of opinions that is out there, to have the short list of, you know, experts that you'll pay attention to, what they're saying. And that helped build your draft strategy as you're going into it. So you've got to apply your own critical thinking to it, obviously. But for me, it's about picking which expert opinions am I going to listen to, and whose rankings am I going to base mine off of as I'm going into the draft. Because you can get into a lot of trouble if you're listening to too many opinions on the same players and they're differing. You go into it and you're kind of in that middle road. You're waffling a little bit because you don't know exactly what you think about a player, because you hear, you know, this good thing from one person and you hear this very positive, a very negative thing coming from a different source.
Sure.
You've got to know where you stand on players. And so for me, doing that is to, really, I've got basically three or four people who are the voices that are kind of fueling my process and my rankings headed into and my valuations headed into a draft.
Gotcha. Yep. So you're saying that the most important thing for you is to now funnel down, narrow down the amount of influences that are speaking into your strategy from an outside source, like a professional fantasy player or a very strong amateur fantasy guy that is similar in thought to you, similar in strategy, or just one that this year may line up with a little bit better. How do you go through selecting which voices you're going to be listening to?
Absolutely. For me, it's not about getting as much information as possible. It's about getting the right information.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's been a process over the last 3 or 4 years where I've finally gotten comfortable with the people who I'm listening to, where I feel like, for one, they are good at what they do.
Yep.
And two, they have a similar thought process as I do, but they spend much more time working on it than I do. As far as how they're picking their players, what sort of data they're using, what sort of scouting type of skills they're using. And so that is important to me to leverage the hard work that others are putting into it, so I don't have to work as hard, but can still be generally as smart, if not smarter, because my amateur opinion may not be as strong as theirs anyway.
Sure, that's good. Yeah, I agree with you that choosing who is influencing you and to what degree you're saturating yourself with information, there becomes a Occam's razor issue where eventually too much of a good thing, you know, too much of a good thing. And so we have to begin kind of honing in on the final stretch here. And as we're looking at 4 days out from our auction draft, I've been excited to hone in. I personally enjoy mock drafts. I think that they can be extremely valuable for really two reasons. One, you can get some data out of them in terms of economic value of players. If you do enough mock drafts, you can kind of assess the typical goings rates for high value players, get a feel for what they're going for. I don't rely too heavily on those, but at the same time, if I bring in enough data, it helps me when it comes to assessing player value, or at least being able to make sure that my system is set up to adapt player value depending on the economy of the league. Second reason, I think it's really important just to practice your strategy and practice your game. You know, you practice like you play. When it's D-Day, when it's time to jump into that draft, you don't want that to be the first draft experience that you've had in the last year. You don't want it even to be the first draft experience that you've had in a given type of draft. And so I think it's really important that mock drafts are a part of your preparation, if only to really practice implementing the strategy that you've committed to go with for a given league.
Yeah, I don't believe I'm depending on mock drafts for evaluating the market for what players are going for as far as price is concerned, because it will be very different in your actual real draft when you get into it. And so if you've built up these expectations in your head for like, oh, people really like this guy or they don't like this guy and I can get him for cheap there or whatever, those may be blown away once you get into your draft. So if you're depending your player evaluations on those mock drafts, you may find yourself in a bad spot very quickly. There was one year where I did I did a lot of mock drafts, probably, you know, somewhere between 12 to 15. And every time I did one, I took the summary email that I got from ESPN afterwards with every player and what value they went for. And I combined all those, consolidated all those to get and what's the average price that these players are going for as I'm doing these mock drafts. Mm-hmm. And it didn't help me at all. It was basically worthless once our league started drafting. So I wasted a lot of time on that and also gave myself some bad information, which didn't help me going into the draft. So for me, it's about, like you said, practicing your strategy, but also just being comfortable with the software, with the interface of the draft. So, you know what buttons to push and that sort of thing. So you don't get lost in the tools. Right. Or like what I have is my own, you know, Excel spreadsheet that I use.
Sure.
For the draft and making sure that's running properly and, refining that as best I can. Before the real deal.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I think that as you and I have discussed, our spreadsheets have gotten more intricate and more custom as time has gone by. I enjoy the camaraderie that brings for you and I as we discuss our different spreadsheet strategies, but also I enjoy the technical ability, the advantage, the leg up. I feel like it gives us to apply our spreadsheet and custom programming knowledge to our preferences and strategies, as well as to the statistics and rankings that are available online that you can pull in. I've really enjoyed tweaking the tool that I'm utilizing this year to help me through the draft, and I'm excited to continue to practice it. I've had to practice it on my laptop, and I'm used to a six monitor setup. I'm typically drafting in my office, in which I have a total of five computers running at once, four computers with a six monitor setup across the whole thing. And I've tried to do my best not to over saturate myself with opportunity, but to really get a good feel for which machine is running which platform. I've got the ESPN auction draft up on one dedicated machine. I've got another machine that's running my spreadsheet, and then I've got another machine that's running on-the-fly analysis of players. And so this year I've been practicing doing all of those things on one puny little laptop that is about 9 years old and has been resuscitated from the grave on three occasions via hard drives and processors and RAM and those emergency room, you know, clear. And we brought her back with the defibrillators. And so I'm excited that the little engine that could is going to have an opportunity to prove herself as I use this old MacBook to draft in England this weekend. And I'm confident that I've gotten it down to where I can kind of fly through it with the same ease as I would in my typical home court setup.
Yeah, and then that's what mock drafting is for. So you are ready for, you've got your tools ready, you're comfortable with it, you know what to expect going into it. And that, you know, maybe it'll help you this year to have a more simplified setup.
Yeah, I'm willing to consider that for sure. Well, with that, Pete, it is an hour closer to our draft. I'm an hour more excited than I was an hour ago. And so I cannot wait. Once again, I've got some hurdles ahead of me. Got to identify some strong Wi-Fi opportunities and get out there and do some mock drafting from England. Make sure everything goes according to plan. What do you do? What are your final thoughts as you get in the zone for the most important draft of your season?
You just got to clear your mind, be confident in your approach, and you know, have your contingency plans in place. You know, just not overthink it, and just stick to your plan. Don't get lost out there.
Yep. Well, Godspeed to all you drafters out there. Thanks for tuning in with us tonight. As I stated earlier this evening, we will be delivering our typical weekly podcast. Next week, you can expect the debrief as we analyze and grade our draft. We'll be talking about the nitty-gritty, how the draft went, how we feel like we executed our plans, and how all of the rosters ended up. So I'm excited for that. We will not be broadcasting that one live, but it will be available at the normal time. Peter, Godspeed to you, sir. Hope you rest up this weekend.
I've got one more final thought for you.
Oh, what's that? It's too late. I've already cued the music.
Riding in a green field with the sun on your face. Do not be troubled, for you are in Elysium, and you're already dead.
He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for joining in Truth and Reconciliation. We'll see you on the flip side. Good night.